Blog Talk Radio.
It is Sunday, 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time in America, November 1st, 2015. I'm Granton Taylor Hughes for my show, The Granton Taylor Hughes Show, with my guest host each week, Gabriella Foster. Hi, Gabriella. How are you?
I'm doing quite well. Thanks, Grant. How about yourself?
I'm just fine, thank you.
Okay, that's good.
Well, there's a joke, a hesitancy, and that always gets them laughing. What happened? There's a lull, see? And then the response is, okay. But I asked you if you were fine, didn't I? Maybe I didn't.
Yes.
I have to go back.
Yes, you did.
Read it. You see how we do things? Just our idle banter gets them laughing, correct?
I'm listening. So we've gotten past the first jokes. And since we've gotten past that, what do you think we should be speaking about this evening?
Well, usually the topic is our four planks, right, of the 1930 Geneva Convention, which probably has bored people stiff for the past 10 years, correct?
That's possible.
Well, I think it's still rather interesting. I have a morning group in the UK that we have a discussion in the morning. One of the people emailed me with praise and what have you after the shows, after the group conference call. And today you say, well, it looks like we've wrapped up the political ideas a lot, and I'm saying, well, that's a nice idea, but it never seems to have closure, in my opinion, because the reiteration and the ongoing process is ever increasing, if you will, in terms of decreasing, either devolution or evolution, and retrograde of the cycle or moving forward. I don't know sometimes, because it's a matter of, as I say, getting to the heart of the matter as much as possible, or focusing on the truth or my subjective opinion of it thereof. But that's why, and I had said this morning, when we need to target the start of maybe a political view, because we have the money issue and the Federal Reserve note, which really started with the 1930 Geneva Convention bankruptcy. So we still have a result of that. And I've said it many times on this show that there are cycles of bankruptcy about 70 years in our society. Seemingly, that takes place. And there is proof of that and whatever. But my opinion is we still need to go back to 1930 because our money still shows that best evidence on the face of it. So we're still dealing with that bankruptcy, no matter what the other factions say in different viewpoints. So that's why I try to clear the field and clear off the table and get down to what is the basis for the practicality and practice nowadays. And that's why I go back to that international bankruptcy. It's a big issue. And because out of that came all the government banking, the IMF, and all the et al. Situations that came out of that under the United Nations first meeting about 15 years later. And they say, well, why didn't they do that in 1930? Well, the telecommunications was a lot slower in those days. We're used to the internet now and the fast speeds of communication, but also the quality is not so great because three times on a three-hour call this morning, the phone dropped. So the technology quality is not so great. It may be fast, but the quality in the past, I think, in my opinion, was better to a certain degree. But, you see, that's another issue of quality control and the whole planned obsolescence and mean times of failures and just the idea of economic demolition of monies, because it's all about profit, but profit doesn't necessarily turn quality, you see. So we may have faster communications, but the quality stinks, in my opinion. But in those days, things were slow to develop, just like the idea that I said when they had the Geneva Convention bankruptcy, it was supposed to stop world wars, but because of the build-up to World War II, and then it started about 9 years, 1939 with with Germany and what have you and all their nonsense that was taking place then, because the actual, like I said, it was supposed to stop the World Wars, but it didn't stop World War II, because that was already in process in terms of that demolition. And that's why I keep saying there's real no ideological wars right now, just like the Middle East and all their fracas, but it's really about money. It's about profit and weaponry and the whole manufacture thereof, and then the buying and selling of the weaponry, and then using it up so you can buy more stuff. See, so there's a game of propaganda that's done by the Trilateral Commission, the medias, and what have you, to show that there is this warfare in the mindsets, but that really doesn't exist because we're in a monetary system. So it's all about profit and loss. And therefore, this whole media idea that we have religious wars is ridiculous. It just doesn't exist. Even in England with the Belfast issues and the IRA and all that business back and forth with the Protestant and the Catholic or the Anglican and the Protestant. But that whole business is really an illusion. It's a big illusion because it's about the bottom line of finance. We're buying and selling things, and then they use it up, and then they buy more stuff, you see. Because
let me ask you a question.
Yeah, go ahead. Sure, please.
Yeah, I want to ask you a question. Because, so what I'm asking is this. Is it at the government level, it's about finance, but do the people still think they're warring because of religious issues? That's what I want to know.
But that's the media propaganda. See, and behind it all, in reality, I mean, words on a paper, or newspapers, or online, Yahoo News, or the Google News, or Fox News online, that's all written. It's not really in practice. What's really in practice is profit and loss, is the buying and selling of things, and then you have Desert Storm, where they have people, troops move the stuff in there, and then they just blow it up. You see what I mean? So what's the reality? That's what I'm saying. I have theory, law, and practice. Theoretically, we shouldn't talk about these things. Legally is one thing, and then what's happened in practice, you see? Or lawfully versus the term legal. Legal is in the bankruptcy terms. But in terms of practice, that is entirely different than what is put in print. See, we write about things, which is propaganda. Then we get down and we measure it. Or let's say we do a description of a property. We survey some land and we write it down in terms of this border and whatnot. But then we get on the land and the border is completely different. And that happens all the time, see? So what I'm saying is practice versus theory or practice versus contract. We have the contracts law, okay, which is paper, and then you have the practice. That's what I'm trying to say. The propaganda on contracts or the written word or the newspapers or the media, you have the media, then you have hot medium in terms of warfare. But that's economic demolition. So it's a perception. That's what I'm trying to say. What's written and what's real are two different things. You see what I mean? That's what I mean. Most people believe in what's written, but when they get down and take a look at what's going on, it's about profit and loss. It's about buying and selling weaponry. I mean, the military complex still exists in terms of NATO. They have 17 agencies, and they still make weapons, and they still sell it because it's big business. The governments like to buy this stuff, you see, because they make a profit and loss by selling it to groups, and then they are trying to get rid of this stuff in the remotest areas or in terms of targeting buildings that need to be refurbished quickly, and if they're not, there's a loss in terms of revenue. See, you see the perception of business, Gabriella, that's it. See, if we get into the business aspect and know that if there's no money, now you might have ideological warfare. You might have religious wars if there's no money involved. When there's money involved, who's the top bidder? Who's the one to be paid off? Who wants some money to settle and not get into the ED, the economic demolition? Somebody... Or just like they pay terrorists to go in and blow things up, you give a perception of propaganda to keep the work mill going on. There's a labor camp that's in a fear-based society because they go to work thinking, well, if I go to work and I pay my taxes, nobody's going to bother me, and I can be in the mill to produce the product. See, because that's what they're doing. The labor camp right now produces the products to sell. It's just an economic cycle, nothing else. There's nothing else going on. There's no ideological warfare. That's the entire ruse. The Catholic Church is about money, gathering land and assets and selling land and assets. They had to go with the mafia back a while back, a few popes back, and get loans from them because they were going bankrupt. That's proven over and over again. There's a lot of discussion about that. But you can't fault them when you're talking about profit. You see, when you're talking about your bank accounts collapsing, what have you, they need money to cover it, see? And where do they get the money? Well, they go to the bankers, and then they say, well, if the money's not made from criminal intent, but it's been laundered, and once it's laundered, then it's considered good. So where does the money come from? Well, it comes from, as I've said many times on the show, it comes from credit instruments called MT103. But after that, who knows where it goes from? See, when you create money, they don't really put conditions on it because who's going to police conditions? There's no time for it. See, so what I'm trying to say, we're in an economic cycle only. There's no ideological warfare. That's a ruse and a perception by misinterpreted people, reporters, and Trilateral Commission that they don't really have to arbitrate that anyway because people are fooled by the fact that you've got a dispute over who's God, if it's Allah or Yahweh, you know, whose God is who. You see, I mean, that doesn't exist. It's like write a check to Yahweh and write a check to Allah. You see, I know that probably get me some bad email, but nevertheless, it's really about money. See, pay off one side and pay off the other, and they won't bother with the argument. But there isn't an argument. See, they're all in it to get a better mansion or a bigger pool or a nicer car or two or three more limousines. It's all about stuff. It's about toys and economic process. How much land I can buy in Beirut or something, or get a better motorcycle or a Ferrari or what have you. You see, it's just a game of toys and entertainment. That's what it's really about. And the rest of it is yeah, or idle talk at cocktail parties or government people that are sensate and they have no idea that they're dealing with the monies that are issued by the banks, and then they think they create money. They just have no clue. I mean, you're talking about ignorance upon ignorance, piled up ignorance, and I'm saying ignorance in terms of ignoring the situations. And they think they're on a vector of truth, when in reality they're just glorified accountants. Leaders of countries are just glorified accountants that are dealing with budgetary processes and where to dole out money to different departments in the countries and blah, blah, blah. Education, agriculture, you name it, all the subjects that they get involved with. And then what happens? And American administrations are done after 8 years if you're lucky to make the second run for presidency. See, so what's the longest you have, 8-year administration? And half the time they're campaigning for the second term. You see, you know that. How ridiculous is it in terms of having an 8-year administration when half the time is campaigning? It's ridiculous. You don't get any work done. And that's set up that way. There's really no work to be done in terms of government. It's just a pseudo-leadership that's there that doesn't even monitor the business. I mean, you see what I'm trying to say? In other words, it's all about money only when there's a monetary system. It's about profit and loss and circular, robbing Peter to pay Paul. The banks create it, and then they use it and circulate it in the business area and government. Is that pretty good? I was on a roll today, right? We burned
yeah,
up half the time.
On a roll. Yeah, I'm a tootsie roll.
Yeah, I get my tootsie roll, right?
Yeah.
Well, so do you understand in terms of pure economics, and then people believe there is ideological warfare, but that's just the ruse of newspapers and the ignorance of taking up one side or the other in terms of religious wars, see? Because there doesn't really exist in practice. It's just written stuff. See, that's why mostly what's written is 95% nonsense, or maybe even 98%, or maybe even 99% nonsense. And what's truth in terms of the 1%? I mean, we talk about a lot of truth, but how much of it is in the marketplace? Very little. I mean, how many times have I gone over and over the dollar bill and explaining what's on the dollar bill, et cetera, and how many times do I get misinterpretations in emails? Even close, trusted people I deal with misinterpret things because it's a matter of the idea of the misunderstanding, the individuality, individual relativity. But we always say, well, let's get it verbatim what's being said. Well, I'm always kidding about, I don't even know if Mortimer Adler's still alive. I should look that up because I quote him all the time. And he was saying he was a verbatimist, and there's a lot of people say they get it word for word. But I doubt that completely because it's, and therefore it's not even important anyway. But if we get our own understanding and put it in words that are relative, that we can relate to and interpret in such a way that maybe we can get into an agreement. See, agreeability is very important to me. I'm always putting two categories. You got the disagreeables and agreeables. Who are you going to go with? Well, wouldn't you rather go with somebody that agrees with your views? I mean, disagreeable means you're going to be in an argument. That seems to be logical. But some people are set for the challenge. They need a challenge for grist for the mill. You see, I mean, some people would rather have an argument than have nothing, right? They can't deal with the emptiness. They got to have their noise and their radios and music and whatever they're, what they call music nowadays. They have to feel energy or whatever from music because they don't want to go in the void type thing. They don't want to go into the dark because they're afraid of the dark. And that's the truth. Turn on the lights, you know. I can't see anything. The lights are turned out. And then you get nervous. And there was a book by H.G. Wells called The Red Room, it was called. And they actually, I think they did a piece on that and a movie about there was a room in a castle, and they would go up into it and turn off all the lights, and they only had candles, and the lights went out, and it was supposed to be a haunted room. And then they realized that the room wasn't really haunted. It was just that when it went dark, people were fumbling about, and they couldn't see anything, and then their emotions heightened, and then fear was the real ghost in the situation. So it was their own fear, and when the prince came out who was trying to go up in the room and said, well, I can handle it, he pounded on the door, and they let him out, and he said, I realized that the problem was my own fear. The fear was the cause of the ghostly wraith type thing. They even take a definable forms. You can feel it because you think it exists. See, because you can't see. There's no senses in that whole thing. And it's the same idea in terms of loss of theory, loss of thesis. When we have no knowledge, it's a dark place. See, so that's why when I came up with the fix for the bankruptcy in 2004, we had a thesis. We had a program. We had a deal. We had a project. You see what I mean? There was something tangible we could pin a star to. Before that, for 75 years, we didn't have anything. See, it was like a dark age of non-information. And see, that's what dark ages are, is there's no thesis. And we say thesis, antithesis, and synthesis, which is the Hegelian dialectic or any type of dialectic. And I always go to the Greek ethos, pathos, logos, which means the same thing. When you have a basic fundamental knowledge, then antithetical would be to argue that knowledge, and then out of the argument becomes a synthesis. Then it becomes a logo. It becomes a symbol. Well, that's why we have symbols. In America, they have the flags. In different countries, they have flags. Those are logos. It's really to enhance one's attention. You put your attention upon the logo, it increases the attention level, the mental level. Why do they have mathematics, a number system, even words? You know, we put our attention, we put our eyes upon the word, and it enhances our attention level. Does that make you more intelligent? Yes, it does. They say people's IQs are better who do a lot of reading. My IQ is lofty because I do a lot of reading. Yours is as well. You're a reader and a writer, and there'll be a predilection to be more intelligent because of that. Because you're involved with the printed word, you're involved with the language, you're involved with the concepts, the constructs, the intelligence of what we do in terms of words. It's an important issue. I mean, that big argument about dumbing down and education and all that is a constant. And they often say that it's contrived, and I'm saying, hold up, I disagree with that. I think it's just mistakes most of the time, or people's irresponsibility. Well, I was talking about that this morning. The irresponsibility of not looking at something when you don't understand it, to look it up in a dictionary. You miss a word, you don't scan over it, you look it up, you write it down. People don't want to do that. In the fast-paced society, in a nanosecond world, people are just moving on. You see, and in that process, I think there's retrograde in terms of intelligence. We're not paying attention to the details. You know, I'm very detail-orientated. I'm into that information. If I'm missing something, I ask a question. You know that about me, Gabriella. I will stop if I don't understand something. What does that mean? How do you spell it? Please explain it to me, because I'm not going to let anything pass that I don't comprehend. And I think if we would do that, people would dedicate themselves to doing that instead of just passing over things they don't understand. And in the process, they lose their grammar skills, they lose their capability. You know, I'm always on the coordinating conjunction in terms of that. You know, I was on my own residence recently. I overcome some issues in terms of personal things. I'm very happy about that. We have to progress. See, if we're not going to progress, then we're in retrogress, and then we're in a dissolution and death situation, as my mentor Wallace Waddles would say in his book, The Science of Getting Rich. You know, we have to do the increase. We have to become better, and if we're not doing that, then we're just going backwards, and that to me is wrong. I think we have a responsibility to be aware of these things. We have a responsibility to the truth. And we have to be diligently, if not fanatical, about the truth in terms of not necessarily being advocacy and causing destruction. I understand that, but being excited about it, being enthusiastic about what we consider to be the truth. And then when we put that out there, it's subject to criticism. I realize that. And that's the nature of the importance of what we're talking about here. You know, I think enthusiasm is very important. And we have to not dampen that enthusiasm. And that's why if people are willing to speak, they're also going to have to be in a situation they're be willing to be criticized negatively or positive. They say criticism used to be both, and now when you say criticism, usually they're considering the negative aspect of that. But that's the risk you take when you're public, when you write a book or if you make statements to the effect. I was even this morning, somebody was saying they saw some of my written things and said there were typos as well. I don't know about that. I went through the process. But the books that I was talking about, I think some of them weren't verified. There's a process called verediting that James Michener used, who was a prolific writer, wrote Poland and Chesapeake and a lot of works in the past, many, many books, probably 50 books he wrote. But he would combine the fiction and, like Rutherford did in the book London, Edward Rutherford, he combined fiction and nonfiction. And then if you don't qualify that, people have a tendency to be turned off by that because they don't know the difference of what's true and what isn't true. So that's a risky thing. But Michener did have a process he called verediting where you would read things out loud and catch all the typos and errors and that sort of thing. So there's a risk in terms of these things. I understand that. And like style and substance really needs to be combined. And when we move forward to make it the very best, but not be caught up in that. In other words, if there's information that's valuable, and I realize if it's coming from a poor grammar presentation, grammatical presentation, that's no good. I realize that. Or a non-resonant thing that maybe creates somebody that doesn't want to listen to it, that's also can be a problem too. So in terms of this, the style is one thing, and I think the substance is more important. But then again, what is the substance? And then you get into this whole didactical process of structure analysis that's easy to fall prey to. Because it becomes casuistry, and then we're not really given any information. It's kind of like getting to our platforms of the health, sovereignty, solvency, and afiancetto, which I've talked about many times on this show, and they're important planks to my platform of the 1930 Geneva Convention bankruptcy, which appears to be a negative platform and is, but I think we're stuck with that for quite some time because my opinion about mathematics needs to be approximated by the bankers, and we need to not get involved with the idea of every penny, and even from the standpoint of the dollars, you know, there's your grammatist, crucify him, because he made a really poor the structured phrase there. And that was really awful, Grantham. That was really terrible. So, well, I truly apologize. However, if I can apologize and amend it, okay, I think that's good. You see what I mean? I agree to the fact that there is a breakdown in something and to correct it. You see? But if I'm still making an effort in participation, you see what I mean? And then if somebody says, well, I saw some errors, well, show me, prove it to me. If they don't exist, then it's just some kind of idle statement in terms of not really knowing what you're talking about. You see what I mean? So sometimes it becomes circular in terms of criticism. People are criticizing, but how they can criticize that their house isn't in order, you see? Show me some of your things and let me take a look at it. See, it's one of these things where the tit for tat, as they say, in terms of if we're going to move forward in terms of excellence and what have you, if we're going to be bogged down in style, then we can never get the substance out. See, and that becomes a bigger issue, a big issue about a style thing. So are you okay in terms of the clarity on the economic issue that we were talking about earlier? Are you okay with that now?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you want to have any comments? We're getting... Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. No, I was just checking the time. I know we're near the end, so probably you want to wind up.
No, I understand that, but did you want to make a comment of clarity or summarize in terms of what I was saying?
So I know that, you know, economics are the biggest issue. I mean, I understand that when it all gets down to it, that's, you know, what people are looking for, although I think that in some of these very old civilizations that are much older than our country, peoples are still battling the thinking they're battling the issues. And, you know, but it's all tied into the economics. So I understand that.
Right. So that's what I'm trying to say. It would be nice to have an ideological discussion, but in reality, it really doesn't exist because of the money, the profit and loss issues. See, we think that we're having these top-level or truth discussions, but in reality, they don't exist when we're talking about getting a profit. See, we're trying to get money to get our food, shelter, and clothing, and because we have to pursue the money, we don't have food, shelter, and clothing, so we're not stable in our needs process. See, so there's never a stability in the needs because there's also an increase in needs all the time. That perpetual increase of wanting more is aggrandized by the money process. You see what I mean? If there was no medium of exchange, then indirect trade could come in and the increase could be based upon just getting whatever you need. And then they say, well, who produces at that point? Well, intensive cultivation of the universe with increase, or intensive cultivation of the universe into the golden age with increase, even better. That's a great affirmation. And then people say, how and the time issue. And I say, forget about the how, forget about the time, and just wax increase, as I'm always saying. It's very, very important. And people are always wanting to comprehend that process. They say that's too easy. I say it's not too easy, because in the process of waxing increase, they get into the whole idea of robotics and other alternative forms to do our bidding, so to speak, in terms of manufacture. So we're down to the last few seconds. Gabriella, thanks for being on the show this week. I really appreciate you, your participation all the time.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, and you're great. You're welcome. I mean, are you okay? Right?
Yeah, I'm perfectly fine. I appreciate the opportunity, and I appreciate all the information, because I know that you know a lot about the subject and are always constantly researching things.
Well, yes, because it's important to stay abreast of these things, but it still pans out what we do here on the show, and it always will, because there's really no end to it. As I said before, we have a thesis. The implementation of it is an entirely different story. I would like to think we could do that, but again, I don't hold out really an optimistic view of it, but it doesn't mean we can't survive in that process. That's the important part, that we have remedy. See, when we have remedy in the Uniform Commercial Code, that's the most important. All right, thank you, all the journeymen. Thank you, new people. This is Grantham Taylor Hughes for my show, see you next week, and goodbye for now.